C6, number 23A.
So I've shown you how the first concept of dualistic thinking came into human consciousness through this differentiation of I and that which is not I, the subject, the basic, and the object, the opposite. Can you see? In this way, opposites came into human consciousness, and so actually the primordial dualism was established. So again, you can see that it was man established, man made. Man created for himself the concept of dualism in order to bring order into his thinking. Therefore, one can understand that really the first opposites were objects, tools, and so on, that they began to feel were the beginning of the outer world, the opposite world. Now we begin to understand why also Shakespeare said that there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. It's we make it with our thinking so. And this, I think, is quite a relief that we see we make hell, that hell doesn't exist. We make dualism. It doesn't exist. We are to be blamed if we have a dualistic universe. So another point has to be seen clearly. See, I talk all about really kindergarten things, but they become now fundamental to us. You can see that human thinking needs limitations in order to understand the world. That's quite interesting to see, that human thinking needs this limitation. Now, dualism is naturally limiting. The moment you split already the one universe into an I and in a not I, you begin to limit your universe. And as you go on splitting it more and more and more and more, you make it everything still more limited. But that kind of limitation has had a terrific positive impact, because the more we limited in thinking, the more we separated, the more dualism we put up in our thinking, the more we could define the phenomena. Define is making finite, so that it doesn't mix with something else. Therefore, let's see the value of dualism. The value of dualism is that we begin to think in limited concepts. That by itself is not a value, but as a method it is of greatest value, because we now begin to think in differentiated concepts. It's no more just one big muddle called the whole. Now that whole muddle, that whole mess becomes now differentiated, and through that differentiated the whole mess becomes ordered. And when it becomes ordered, it can be understood. Therefore, let's summarize it and see that comprehension demands what? Comprehension demands, for human thinking, demands distinguishing, differentiation, lines of demarcations. Can you see? There are terms here that Mrs. Eddy afterwards would attribute to our system of reference that spirit identifies, classifies, individualizes. That's only possible by making a line of demarcation. That spirit, the firmament, is that line of demarcation between spirit and matter. Can you see? That these ways of first trying to limit concept is a way of understanding, and not just a way of making everything small and limited. And we must naturally see that we keep it there where it really belongs to, namely as a way of understanding. Now, when we differentiate, we really come to opposites, because opposites are what? Just the extreme form of differentiation. So opposites is a very helpful medium or method for seeing the identities, to see the definitions of things. From the opposites, we must see where actually the error of classical reasoning lies. Namely, that they considered the opposites of equal value. So they estranged, so to say, the helpful method of differentiation, which was helpful for understanding, and estranged it, and so that the opposites were of equal value. And we will see that it's at that point where Mrs. Eddy sets in and begins to correct the dualistic logic. But still, till we come to that point, let's remember that therefore the method of learning was through opposites, that opposites help understanding. One of the methods of opposites that is a very helpful method of learning is actually trial and error. See, trial and error is the method of opposites. You try, and if it doesn't succeed, you know it is wrong. You try again in another way, and you see it doesn't succeed, it's wrong. And you try and try until you find that method which makes click. And then you say, this is right. And actually, most of our lives are a life of trial and error. We try and try again, and through error we learn. Can you see? Through the opposite, we learn. And so, that dualistic sense is entering in consciousness at that stage of the classics. It's quite interesting to see that the term two comes from duo, that again is the root of doubt, duo or doubt. What is doubt? Doubt is constantly to see two possibilities, two bases. Doubt comes from the same root as devil. In the Middle German it is very well pronounced. It is the Teufel, which is the devil. And so can you see what really doubt is? It's a way of dualism that always says it could also be otherwise. So really the devil or duvel is duality. Duality is really our devil. At the beginning, one was mostly aware of the duality of objects. That we had the duality of the I, the subject, and the object, and that object were mostly first objects. But little by little, these material objects were seen as abstract concepts, so there were no more objects, but there were abstract counter facts or counter things, and we called them opposites. So opposites are actually the conceptional sense of objects. Here, then, the moment we could, our human thinking made conceptional dualism, we have all the opposites that enter, really, the doubt, making two cases out of everything, came in. At once we had the dualism of right and wrong, of good and evil, and so on. So that first you have the dualism of subject-object, then the dualism of opposites, and Mrs. Eddy really refined that even more, that she came to the dualism of ideas, illusions. Actually bringing down all those dualistic concepts just to one dualistic concept of ideas versus illusions. This doubting was actually a great philosophical point in the rationalistic age. You know, like Descartes, he had his wording, dubito ergo sum, dubito, I doubt, therefore I am. He said, everything that you think about can be doubted, and therefore you can make two cases of it. And funny enough, he said, there is only one thing you can't doubt, and that is that I doubt. So can you see that the rationalistic philosophy really is based on a dualistic concept? So the value must be seen that it has a value, it is a tool for becoming aware of what is right and wrong. And you would feel, I guess, that this is something positive, that we can know what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is evil, so that it becomes a tool for overcoming ignorance. Because as long as we have an undifferentiated universe, we cannot understand it, and we are ignorant about the universe. Therefore, you can see that only those cultures that have accepted the Greek classical thinking were able afterwards to bring forth science. They could overcome ignorance. There was no other way of overcoming ignorance except through dualistic thinking, because that was the beginning. So there is a value in this dualism. And you can see the enormous value that Mrs. Eddy gave to dualism, because through all her writing, it's always that opposites that play such a great part. And also it naturally was a great help of freeing ourselves from the mystical age. I come to a next title, 4, the two-valued logic in Christian Science. You see, I showed you in point 3, first, what is dualistic human thinking, how it came into existence, what it implies, what is the pros and cons of it. And now let's see how this dualistic thinking applies to the teaching of Christian Science, how Mrs. Eddy deals with that question. Mrs. Eddy bases, so to say, her teaching on that dualistic logic. But here is the great point of departure. Whereas in the other sciences, this classical logic is the one and the all, for Mrs. Eddy, the classical logic is only the starting point, the jumping off ground, so to say. And naturally with some good reason, because if she wants to present something new and wants to present it to a culture that is really thinking in the classical logic, it is naturally a great help to build the bridge to something new by starting there, where world consciousness is, I should say the Western world consciousness is, and to build a bridge to the new. So she starts out with the two-valued logic, but not with the whole content of the classical logic. She gives to the classical logic a new content, a new value, so to say. What is the starting point that she also takes from classical logic? It is the opposites. The textbook is full of that sense that we have to be able to distinguish between opposites. That every concept, so to say, has an opposite concept. And therefore she tries all kinds of terms with which she can explain the dualism, or say at least the opposing concepts. She speaks about the unlikeness, about the reversed, about the deflection, about the simulation, antithesis, contradiction, solecism, falsity, false concept. Can you hear that she tries out all sorts of things in order to distinguish between the two opposites? But then really comes the main point where she departs from classical logic. In classical logic, the opposites have equal value. Whereas in Mrs. Eddy teaching, the opposites have not equal value. And there we can see that it is the values that change, because in Mrs. Eddy, for her, truth is the fact, and the opposite of truth, error, for her is not a fact, but a counterfeit. It is a false concept, and no more a fact. And there is where she changes. This is therefore also always the criticism from other people who read the Christian Science textbook, that they are very much up in arms when they read that disease and sin and death are only errors, and that error is only a counterfeit of truth. For them, disease is a fact and is a truth, and not a counterfeit. Or to put it into just one term, in the classical logic, the two values, one is a fact and the other is the counterfact. In Christian Science, one is a fact and the opposite is a counterfeit. So though Mrs. Eddy has a very big vocabulary and uses practically every main word of the English vocabulary, the term counterfact never enters into her vocabulary. She breaks with the classical logic. So what does she do? She really makes the value absolute, one value absolute, truth is absolute, therefore error is no more absolute, error therefore is a counterfeit. And so you can see that there is the point where the dualistic logic is getting overformed into a one-value logic, because she, when you say, absolutizes one value, and therefore nothingizes the other value. Gosh, Webster will be happy. In this way, you can also see that she makes being now uncontradictory, because one value becomes just the only value, and the other value is nothing. Therefore, and here comes in the main point, therefore, her dualism, if you can call it so, is only a conceptual dualism, and not a factual dualism, a dualism of two realities. It's only a conceptual dualism, and she needs that conceptual dualism because we have seen dualism is a help for understanding. But she doesn't make the mistake of absolutizing the two values, but only absolutizes the one in order to keep the one being intact, and therefore makes the other so-called value only a counterfeit. Therefore, she would be saying that human logic is false. That's one thing she says. And now we see why human logic is false and why we should not try to defend Mrs. Eddy with human logic. Can you see the mistake we were making for a whole century to defend Mrs. Eddy with a logic which she hasn't had? Yes? But she uses the two conceptual logic. You know how she says that you cannot explain life without using the term death. The term. She didn't say you can't explain life without seeing that death is a reality. But just the concept of the opposite. The term, introducing the term. Well, a term doesn't mean that it is real. Or that she said we can only explain really truth by using the term error, not by making error real. So, what is the logic of the textbook? We can see all through the textbook that she works with opposites, with dualism of a special kind. With a dual conceptual logic. With dualism, all through the textbook we find that sin, sickness and death are opposites of spirit, that matter and evil are opposites of science, that the human mind is in contradicts the divine mind, the human opinions contradict the divine. Can you see all through, on every page, you have these opposites spelled out. Therefore, she spelled them out as terms, as concepts, but not as values of reality. That's the point. Therefore, strictly seen, she has a one-valued logic with a dual conceptual logic. Get it? Yeah? She has a one-valued logic, which she explains through the two conceptual logic. Can you say conceptual logic? I must coin a word by myself. Two concepts that are opposite. So her dualism is a conceptual dualism and not a real dualism. A dualism of reality. So it's a dual, perhaps we can call it a dual conceptual logic. And that she uses all over. It's constantly spirit, matter, soul, body, principle, sciences, life, death, truth, error, love, hate. That's why we have ideas and illusions. And we still distinguish them. How can I distinguish ideas from illusions, he asks. She asks for the duality, for a conceptual duality. Yeah? All right? So, our comprehension, as we have seen, is built on these opposites. And therefore, without these opposites, really, we still would be in the mystical age. But that second value, no, it's not the value, that second one, is not a fact, is not the reality. It, therefore, she always uses, you know, to be understood clearly, she uses all these terms, so-called mortal mind, so-called error, suppositional error, supposititious error. She always tries to find terms when she explains the other one, so that to make it clear that the other one is not the fact, is not the thing, is not the reality, but so brings in all kinds of terms to bring this out more clearly. Yes. Yeah.